Duckers and bullheads never will do, but a catfish can show you a thing or two. If you go down to the bank so you can flash your bait, if you're looking for a catfish, mama, you ain't got long to wait. Catfish got whiskers and a sweet little grin, but you never can tell where a catfish had been. Well, you go down to the bank so you can flash your bait. If you're looking for a catfish, mama, you ain't got long to wait. I'll be your catfish, honey, any old time. You just call out my name, babe, and drop me your line. Sitting by the water, staring at the stream. Tell me, honey, all the runny catfish in your catfish in your catfish in your dreams.
We got O'Keefe, finally, after all this time. That's coffee he's drinking, isn't it?
After years of constantly bidding back and forth, the price was right.
The price was right, yeah. Well, actually, I got a little bugged with some of our friends on another station. See, I've been bugging Yarian for 6 months, saying, hey, dude.
You got him at the wrong time, man. Just as I moved back to town, they fired him.
They didn't fire him?
Well,
he went
not.
On to a better and a bigger job.
Well, I know he did that.
With somebody else. I mean, they couldn't fire Yarian. Yarian would fire Erdogan. You know, Bill Yarian writes...
I think Bill Yarian was giving Alan Erdogan stock reports. I think it's probably what got him into trouble.
Yeah. Bill Yarian is one of the best writers on music I know of, and he prostitutes himself by working for record companies to make a buck.
Really?
And right now he's involved up to his snurd with The Who since he's over at MCA. But he's the guy who sent me the second Danny O'Keefe record, which most of you people think is the first one.
Right, that's all right. Let them think that.
No,
the first one, we got to get all the dirt off before we can listen to it. We kicked a lot of dirt on that one.
Hey, you know, actually, I went and I dug it out because I remembered I'd had another record someplace. And I ignored it because it had the dumbest cover, I think,
really?
In the last 20
really?
Years.
Eve Babbitts and I fought over that cover just violently.
Yeah, well, it looks like somebody dipped it into a rhubarb and tomato stew, you know. And, you know, if you haven't heard of somebody and you get 100 records in the first week of the month and one looks dumb, just by that you pass by, you know.
Well, show you where I was at. I thought it was a catchy cover.
Square. Square. Yeah, I went back and funny enough, there was a... The first version of a song called Good Time Charlie's Got the Blues was on that first record, and I ignored it completely, of course, until I...
Well, that flute, you know. It's my good friend Billy McPherson playing flute on that.
Yeah, somehow that didn't organize as well as the second time around. But I'll tell you, there's one thing on that record called Reverend Stone that just knocked me down.
Really?
Yeah.
I quit doing that. I don't know why. Just people blew me out a couple times when I did it. It was like a little too emotional or something. Turned them off.
What's wrong with emotion?
Well, I don't know. I have a bad tendency to do that. If I discover that I sing a song and I put everything in it that I've got, and there are some people in the audience that can't grasp it, I sort of quit doing it. And I know that's a bad thing to do, but there's nothing worse than giving everything you got and realizing that no one understood what you were doing, you know?
I think what you have to do is find a better way to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of reaching people.
Yeah, maybe a better way of setting it up or something, you know.
Yeah. Very often, I've found it so that somebody who's a writer starts as a writer, and then because he writes and then he records, then he starts performing. Right.
Right. And it's almost a schizophrenic process, really. You know.
Well, how have you found it? Let me ask you that.
In what sense do you mean?
All right.
I mean, I found it a lot of different ways, and every time I discover a new facet, it creates some kind of a subtle change in me.
What's the difference between the way you feel, one, sitting around the living room or whatever with your friends and picking up a guitar and say, hey, I got a new song, bing bang, and you play it, right? Or in the studio, especially the first time when you go in to record. And being on stage, say, first of all, being the opening act for somebody else, and that, which is the way a lot of people start, right?
Like absolutely. The only way you can do it.
And then in a concert. And then what it's like to work a club like the Troubadour, for instance, where ostensibly you have a more attentive, and supposedly, I say that with big quotes on it.
Yeah, you got a lot of critics, however.
Yeah.
If you got a favorable audience in a concert, you do a lot better because everybody came to listen, no one came to drink. And if they came to the concert, they pretty much didn't come to cut you. Or a lot of times they'll come to a small club because it's the place to be. Yeah. A lot of times they got in free.
Yeah.
And so cheap shots are easy. And that's okay. There's definitely a place for that, and it's essential. Because you need the cheap shots to sort of toughen you up. Because as a performer, you have to know what works and what doesn't work. If you go out there and just bleed for them, that ain't enough. You got to bleed in style if you're going to bleed at all. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but not...
I think it is sort of important that you do bleed for them, because that's part of what went in the song. And you have to give at least something of what was the original impetus in the creation of the song. You know?
I should think you'd have to give it all, or else you wouldn't reach them at all.
No, I don't know. Sometimes it seems like if you give it all, it hurts you more than it is good for them or gets a response. I mean, I don't know. I'm still working that out, you know. I wish I had a good insight on that. People who I see as really powerful performers, I know aren't giving it all except in maybe physical terms.
Well, I wonder about that.
I don't know, you know. I'm trying to think of, when I said that, I was trying to think of performers who have really moved me.
Like whom?
I got to really think.
All right.
I can't think of anybody that has really moved me in a long time. I can't think
right.
of anyone.
All right. I won't pin you down on that. But
if I think of anybody, I'll speak out.
Throw out a name, right?
Because I was trying to think of a performer who has really moved me in a long time, and I can't think of anybody. You know, not even on record, sure, but, you know, that's a different thing. Being in the studio is a much different experience than being on stage.
That's what I was asking you.
Yeah, much. You're alone in the studio, essentially. You eliminate the critics as quickly as you can in the studio, except for your producer. And it's essential that he is a critic. Because he's the arbiter, you know. I think you have to have an arbiter in a studio, or you become excessive. You have too much to play with.
Yeah.
You know, and you make sure that you don't have critics as musicians who are backing you up. You get rid of them as quickly as you can.
Right.
You know. In fact, good studio musicians learn how to do that. They jive you to death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're really polished professional musicians, they'll tell you it's the greatest thing, and every cut's a hit.
Yeah. Yeah, and that way they do six things a day,
right.
And if you ask them what the hell they played 3 days ago, they couldn't tell you.
They couldn't care. They just know they're making about $80,000 to $150,000 a year, and that's more money than you're making.
Yeah, and they grin a lot.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't cost anything. Yeah, but the reason I was asking you this, the first time I saw you was on
television.
Actually,
I know who blew me out.
Who?
In a very subtle way, but I listened the whole set with my eyes closed, and I really loved their music. Was the Wailers.
I don't know the Wailers.
Oh, they play reggae. They're from Jamaica.
Oh, yeah.
And remember the song Steer It Up?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a Bob Marley tune. And there's other Bob Marley tunes that are much better than that, really. But they're Rastafarians, and they play real Jamaican music, people music, you know.
Yeah, we got into reggae bit by bit by bit, and then finally I realized that an awful lot of the things I like going back to the Israelites.
Desmond Decker, yeah, that was a nice song.
We're reggae.
Yeah.
And so one night I said, okay, by golly, we'll play that. We'll play the Doobie Brothers thing, and we'll play the stuff that Paul Simon has done. And we'll play, you know, the reggae. And then we got Jimmy Cliff. And
did you ever see his movie?
No.
Movie gives you a good insight into that music that is very hard to get otherwise.
Yeah, because on the record, it isn't as exciting as I was told it would be.
No. It's laid back. Well, those people, it's like if you were sitting in Hawaii and you had lots of reefer, that music would make the most sense of all.
All right, that's how I'll try. Hey, on the other program that you did a couple of new songs, and I sure as hell want to hear them again. One was Gypsy, one was the one about Chief Joseph.
Ah.
And, you know, we got the records to play. I don't do this, and I'm going to ask you if you feel like doing it. I ordinarily don't do it because I figure, all right, a guy's written a song, and he's performed it, and he's put it on record, and he's performing it in clubs and concerts or whatever else. You don't ask him, what did you mean by that?
Sure, why not?
Well, ordinarily...
I'd ask somebody what they meant in a novel.
Yeah, all right, but in your case... For instance?
In fact, I'd like to ask Bob Dylan what he meant about a lot of that stuff.
You would, huh? Get to be interesting.
Right.
I had him on the show, and I forgot to ask him. I suddenly got an insight, because you're talking about Mad Ruth the Babe, you're talking about a guy in a bar and what have you, and all of a sudden, there's a whole different picture than
yeah.
I had.
And that was why I never recorded that song for a long time, that I felt that... Even though I meant that and intended that, without some sort of written explanation in front, it would never make any sense. You know, I mean, the memories I have of Babe Ruth are only legend, and the memory of my father crying when Babe Ruth died. You know, I mean, that is an impressive enough memory.
Yeah.
But I don't know a lot about Babe Ruth except just the little incidental stories. And the only way I could make sense out of it was thinking of that guy at the bar, right? I mean, it's the summer that Henry Aaron is going to maybe hit the, you know, record-breaking.
Yeah. Run, right?
That it's got to be the common topic, right? Everyone at the bar is talking about, you know, everybody who's got a cool Babe Ruth story, right, of which there are a zillion, is gonna pull it, right?
Yeah.
The coolest one I ever heard of was one I read in an article, which I wish I could remember the guy's name. But there's a guy named, I think his name was Frank Duggan, or Joe Duggan, I can't remember who the two guys were. They were teammates on, you know, those particular Yankee years when the Babe was there. They're carrying him out of St. Patrick's, right? This is at his funeral. And it's a real hot day, and the one guy turns to the other and says, Jesus, I wish I had a beer. And the other guy said, so does the Babe.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually saw Babe Ruth in a baseball uniform. He wasn't playing anymore, but he was coaching for the Dodgers. And when I was a real little kid. But he was a legend, you know, I'm a few years older than you are. He was a legend in my lifetime.
He was amazing. He was, you know, he got in baseball once again to be the national pastime.
It's almost
a dead issue.
So maybe people don't know what we're talking about. Can you do Mad Ruth the Babe with just a guitar?
No, I can't. That's the one bad thing about it. I wish I could.
All right. So I'll tell you what we do. Where did I put the record? There it is. I'll cue that up. Chop, 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 chop. Turn that down, turn that down. I'll cue it up. You tell them. Just as if nobody had ever heard the record before, and if you wanted to write something in front about what the song was about.
Right.
Okay?
Okay, you have to think about that old guy you see in bars. He's not that old, but you think he is. He's in his 50s, right? And he lived a long time with a woman named Ruth, who has left him because she can't stand his drinking any longer or his ways. And... he's telling you Babe Ruth stories, right? Because it's the season, and it's apropos, and a man at a bar likes to tell stories and talk. And he's telling you about Babe Ruth, but the drunker he gets, the more he leaks. And so he's leaking about a woman named Ruth as well as telling you stories of Babe Ruth. Whatever. Thank you.
One day I was thinking about the baby and the memories he left behind, the old ball game. And the shame of it all is that they're almost gone, but there's still a few pieces I can recall. Catch yourselves to a roof. You know it's just a game. You win, you lose, but it's all the same. And the babe would turn and say, you know you're right, but I'd still love to play. She turns to me and wonders where I am and where I'd be if she didn't care. I return to Ruth to say, you know I'd be all right, but I'd still love to play. Pitcher throws at Ruth, he can't afford to miss. He held the ball like a stolen kiss. And the babe just let it fly and apologized like it hurt the guy. That Ruth just loves to bitch. She can afford to miss. She makes a deal as you steal your kiss. She never says goodbye. She really loves the game. She hardly knows the guy. Gone,
there's still a few pieces I can recall. That room, you should have known the day.
That damn thing is perfect.
It's perfect except for one flat note.
Oh, hell with that. Actually, I get bugged by that. I won't mention any names, but somebody you worked with quite recently shocked the hell out of me because she was up on that stage, and obviously she thought she was doing great.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she or anybody in her band ever sang two notes in the same register.
Hmm.
And or played. And I wonder, can't they hear it?
Sometimes on stage it's real deceptive. And if you've been drinking, it's even more deceptive.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're trading one thing for another.
Yeah. Now, there's some lines that you've written, you know, in Good Time Charlie. Well, the hardest thing, when did you write that? How long ago?
I'm not exactly sure anymore. I think about 6 years ago, five to six,
all
somewhere
right.
in that
so you're
period.
In your early 20s. And
the only way I have known it that the guy who's that it was about is about 38 now, 39. And he was 33 at the time.
Well, that's the line that kills me, because how the hell did he say that line?
No, he just wasn't. He just wasn't a kid any longer. He was in the hospital with a heart attack and his old
you
lady
can do
left
that.
Him. That song?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can do that song.
Okay, tell a story before you do it, though.
Okay. I have to get another pick. My Sorry. Harmonica. God knows you can't do nothing without your harmonica. Ask Albert Grossman.
I've asked Albert Grossman my last question.
Did you get an answer?
He grayed at me a lot.
Grayed at you. Grade A. Now, this guy was a methadone dealer, right? Which, for those of you that never get any quicker than you are, is a good way or a bad way, depending how you look at it, to do that. And he used to carry around, like he and a friend of mine used to make methadone, which I don't know why they made methadone as opposed to anything else, except I think it was easy. It's easier to make good meth as opposed to making good anything else. Right? Uh-huh. And they had mason jars of the stuff. And I don't know whether you can imagine how much methadone that is.
Enough to kill an army?
Yeah, well, enough to make an army go faster than they want to go. And he kept sampling, right? Every time I saw him, he was dipping his finger in and putting it way back on the end of his tongue. And he used to go up and down the coast selling it as quickly as he could. And took too much of it, and one day it just blew himself out. Literally had, which I was told later isn't actually a heart attack, but it's very similar to a heart attack. All the vessels constrict. It's a you know, physical reaction that you have against the drug. And landed him in the hospital. His old lady had had enough at that point. Told him she didn't want to live like that no more. And at 33, he got awake. And he's doing better now. One of the mellowest people I was ever around. Really a beautiful guy.
Yeah, well, sing some.
Everybody's gone away. Said they're moving to L.A. There's not a soul I know around. Everybody's leaving town. Some caught a freight, some caught a plane. Find the sunshine, leave the rain. They said this town will waste your time. I guess they're right, it's wasting mine. Some gotta win, some gotta lose. Good time, Charlie's got the blues.
Good time Charlie's got the blues. You know my heart keeps telling me you're not a kid at 33. You play around, you lose your wife. You play too long, you lose your life. I got my pills to ease the pain. Can't find a thing to ease the rain. I'd love to try and settle down, but everybody's leaving town. Some gotta win, some gotta lose. Good time Charlie's got the blues. Good time Charlie's got the blues. Good time Charlie's got the blues.
Such a good song. How come it was a hit?
How come? You know, that's the only one I ever knew that I really had. You know, walking into Charlie Green's office or Ahmet Erdogan's office or Russ Regan's office or whoever the dude was at the time, you know, they could smell it.
Yeah, you could smell them smelling it, right?
Yeah, right.
Right. As a matter of fact, Chip Taylor wrote a very good song about that.
Of which is the song? The Billboard song?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love his songs. Yeah. I did a song of his one time in a movie called Adam at 6 a.m.
You sang it?
Yeah, with Michael Douglas. No, I didn't sing on camera. Oh. I just sang it in the track.
Oh.
It was a good movie. It was just a little movie, and it'd probably be shown on TV in a couple of years or something, but it was all right. Joe Don Baker was in it. He was great.
Oh, is he great?
I love him as an actor, man. He's real.
He's the non-singing Hoyt Axton.
Yeah.
You know.
That's an interesting idea. It'd be neat to have some Hoyt Axton songs or some Allman Brothers songs or something in a movie he was in.
You know, Hoyt's a hell of an actor.
Really?
Yeah, he did. He did a couple of, I don't know, bonanzas, and he was in some movie. It was an awful movie. We played a heavy, but he did one scene in a mining camp, and he was the bully, right? And he gets into a knife fight with a hero. Well, violence ain't pretty. And, I mean, it really isn't, you know.
No, I know it.
And he came on, he got that crazy, unfocused, glazed look in his eye that you only see in somebody who's actually been in a fight to the death, right? Tanked up on something and ready to kill. And it was frightening. I mean, it was something else. You know, there's no way he could have done that without having been there. And most people who've been there don't know how to do it on command.
No.
There's very little end, as a matter of fact, to Mr. Axton. We just got a book of his line drawings.
What kind of drawings?
Line drawings.
Oh.
You remember the...
I used to draw giraffes and stuff. I never drew any lines.
Remember the William Steig drawings back... Jimmy Steig's old man was a cartoonist. He used to do these marvelous cartoons with captions.
Right.
Hoyt's in the same league. And I didn't know he could do it. I didn't know he could draw, you know, a daisy. Anyhow, we're not talking about Hoyt Axton on this show. He's had 40 programs to do it himself.
Right.
We're talking about Danny O'Keefe, and he's here. And before we get into new stuff, there's one more song on that album that I just love. One, because it's true, and two, because it's a good song. You write good songs. You write lyrics that are lyrics. The fact that they also make poetry when you read them is groovy. But I can think of a lot of people who are writing fairly good poetry and putting them to any damn tune, and they're not songs.
Yeah, they got to be the same thing somehow to make real sense.
Yeah.
You know, the song and the music have to be the same thing. I find a lot of times I'll make the mistake of working out a melody and chord changes and stuff that I really love. And I cannot squeeze words in it. It defies words. I just leave it alone. You know?
Play what? You got any of those?
Well, this play thing one. I like. The only thing I could ever come up with it was a child's love. But you know, I never could work on that very good. Shades of Miles Davis.
I don't think I could put any lyrics to that.
I had words actually. I couldn't do them for you.
Yeah, those are the ones that come at 2 o'clock in the morning, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Actually, Mad Ruth the Babe came at 2 o'clock in the morning. I was laying, could not get to sleep. I was rewriting the words of another song when I finally got up. But as I was laying there, I kept getting this line: "The catcher says to Ruth, you know, it's just a game." And it just kept over and over, and I couldn't shake it. I finally figured I better write it or I'd lose it.
Yeah, but the next line is the one that kills me.
Yeah, you win, you lose.
Yeah. Well, no. Where does it go where it says...
The babe would turn to say, you know, that's...
But
you're right, but I'd still love to play.
Yeah, and it's the way you say that sorry, kind of tender kind of thing, you know, just before he belts the ball out of the park.
Right, he was great. Whenever that particular instance was... Was it when you'd been down a long
Chicago,
time, right?
1933.
33?
Yeah, against Cubs. World Series.
I was thinking of, I think, an incident that was maybe 33, yeah.
Where he pointed where he's going to hit
the ball. Yeah, right, that particular time.
Yeah, well, there are even some people, you know, that like to spoil everything and like to say that he never really did point.
No, I know he pointed.
Well, I said, you know, he sort of waved his hand in the direction and what have you.
Whatever.
And that he didn't mean really to do it.
But he hit it on the first pitch, so, I mean, you know.
Right. No, he pointed right where he's going to park it, and that's where he parked it. And he's the only man that ever did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really? I was thinking of him the other day that if he was extremely human, you know, in a lot of ways, but I think that also just enhances the quality of his character. You know, I mean, there were a lot of funky things he did as well as, you know, beatific things he did.
Yeah, and he had a disease, which I forget they called some kind of euphemistic thing, right? And everybody in the whole country, all the kids, were very concerned that he'd get over this disease. And what it was gonorrhea.
Really?
Oh, sure.
All right.
He was a rough
guy. I assumed it was cancer all these years.
No, I don't mean then. This was back, you know, like back in the 20s when he was at the height of his game. Yeah, anyhow, there's a song he wrote called The Road.
The Road, yeah.
And I said, because it's true and because it's a good song. I tell you, it's something you do. Randy Newman can do it. A few other people can do it. Not too many. You can make the listener see a whole person. You know, just from the words out of their own mouth. There's always
Newman does it exceptionally well.
Yeah.
I've been listening to, I bought a couple tapes from my car stereo, and I'm listening to Eric Satie, and the resemblances are incredible. It's like in a lot of his songs, like he puts Satie to words, which
that's interesting.
Oh, really? I mean, I don't know whether he ever consciously ever listens to him, but just
well, you never know with Randy.
Yeah, he's got some things to kill me.
byways and dance halls. A good song takes you far. You write about the moon, you dream about the stars. Losing old motel rooms, girls in daddy's cars. You sing about the nights, you laugh about the scars. Coffee in the mornings, cocaine afternoons. You talk about the weather, you grin about the room. The phone calls long distance to tell you how you've been. You'll forget about the losses, you'll exaggerate the wins. And when you stop to let them know you got it down, it's just another town along the road. The ladies come to see you if your name still rings a bell. They give you damn near nothing and they'll say they knew you well. So you tell them you'll remember, but they know it's just a game. And along the road their faces all begin to look the same. And when you stop, let them know you got it down. It's just another town along the road. It isn't for the money, and it's only for a while. You stalk about the room, you roll away the miles. Gamblers in the neon, clinging to guitars. You're right about the moon, you're wrong about the stars. And when you stop to let them know you got it down, it's just another town along the road.
That's got to come right out of your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That comes from playing Yakima, Washington, and Lewiston, Idaho.
Right. And not even staying at the Holiday Inn.
Oh, no, they don't have Holiday Inn in Lewiston, Idaho, I don't think.
Yeah, well, you're from...
Lewiston, Idaho was great, though, actually, because they got some of the greatest hawk shops in the world in Lewiston, Idaho. You can buy these old Nez Perce dresses that they sell down here for like $300 or $400 for $50, $35, $50 up there.
Well, now that we're talking about Nez Perce.
The Nez Perce.
Yeah. Yeah, a song called Joseph.
Joseph? Okay.
You better explain some of this in front.
Well, there are very few great Americans. And there are almost none who I revere, short of Jefferson maybe. A couple others I probably don't know about. But I read a book a long time ago. This friend of mine hit me too, and he got hip to it in high school, which I thought was great. And being from Washington State, it was sort of pertinent. The book was, I think, by Will Henry, and it was called From Where the Sun Now Stands, subtitled I'll Fight No More Forever, which is Joseph's final speech, or whatever you'd call it. It's his surrender speech when all of his tribe and his horses and everything he'd ever lived for lay dying or dead, and his brother and all his family and everything had been killed. He was up on the Bear Paw Mountains in Montana, which is just about 50 miles, 50, 60 miles from Canada, which would have been free territory at that point for Indians anyway. And that was part of his surrender speech. He was simply saying that, "You have done it to me. Please give me time to gather what little respect I can and what is left of my people and take care of them. And yes, we'll go on your reservation and we'll die, but it's okay." So I got into him, you know. I got into Nez Perce as much as I can, even to the point of one time going to see Joseph's great-great-grandson dance. And he's a beautiful dancer. He's like a bird when he dances. And he brought home something that was that I'd overlooked out of self-righteousness or whatever, that I'm just another honky, you know, depending on how you look at it. They are royalty. They were here first before all those people from the Mayflower. And it's something to think about every time you see one of them drunk, you know, because it's hard to like them when they're drunk.
It's hard to like most people when they're drunk.
Right. Anyway, if you can't find a reference to him anyplace else, look in Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, and it'll give you a synopsis. His name was Joseph, or Himatuyalakek, the thunder rolling to higher places in the mountains.
Joseph went to parley with one-armed General Howard. The general knew he was no fool, and Joseph was no coward. Howard said to Joseph, "I mean to have your land, and I can drive you from it. You'll come to understand." Joseph looked at Howard, he truly was amazed. He didn't understand the white man's evil, stupid ways. Joseph said to Howard, "No man owns this earth. You cannot buy her from us, for you don't know what she's worth. I will give you presents," General Howard said. "I'll give you farms and houses and blankets for your bed." "The earth is my mother and my father is the sun. My life may soon be over. I'll join them when it's done." "There's gold in the valley where the flowing water winds. There's men who'd kill to have it and trouble not their minds. The great white father, he's a very hungry man. He tried to fill his mouth with what is too big for his hand. Tell me, Colonel Gibbon," a fresh lieutenant said, "are we to take us prisoners or leave them all for dead?" Gibbon said, a scowling, I said this much to you. A good engine's a dead one. Do whatever you got to do. Gibbon had horse soldiers with whiskey on their breath. Their hearts were full of hatred. Their souls were cold as death. Down on a big old river, Gibbon did attack. The Nez Perce rose up bravely and drove the soldiers back. But at the Bear Paw Mountains, they ran into General Miles. They were almost free in Canada. It was barely 50 miles. Four long, cool days, the battle guns did sound to the little band of Nez Perce lay dying on the ground. The fifth day of the battle, when the warrior's blood was gone, Joseph signaled Miles, he no longer could go on. My people, they are freezing, the few of them that live. If life is all I've left, it's to them that I must give. Hey, hey, honey, hey, hey, honey, this trail ends in dust, going to the setting sun, as Joseph of the Nez Perce gives General Miles his gun. From where the sun now stands, from where the sun now stands, I'm giving up my gun, as I've given up my land. From where the sun now stands, I'll fight no more forever.
I'm not even going to make any comment on that. I'm just going to let them do their commercials right now. All right, commercial's over.
I'll make a comment.
Yeah?
There are two. Which, if you think about them, they'll rip you up. One is, after they put Joseph on the reservation, he did all he could to help his people, and he was a friend to white and red alike, and he was cool. And he drank because he couldn't get any other medicine. It was the only medicine left to him. And the night of his death, he sang his death song because he knew exactly when he was going to die. You know, almost as though he had willed himself to die at a particular moment. And he waited until the sun came up, and he watched the sun come up. And he passed over. He just fell over, dead. And the irony was that when the white coroner, who had been a friend of his, came out, he put on the death certificate, cause of death, broken heart.
Really?
Yeah, and it's really on the death certificate, which is a crusher. The other crusher is that in Lewiston, Idaho today, there is a dentist. And I wish I knew his name and where he lived, because I know some people that would like to drill him for a change. He has in his house the skull of Joseph's father, of which Joseph promised that, you know, he would never give up that land, the land of his fathers. It was no one's to buy, no one's to sell. The dentist has in his house as and uses it and brags of its use as an ashtray.
We have some charming folkways.
Really? They dug up the Nez Perce burial grounds for the people who like to practice black magic so they could have skulls to practice with.
And what you may not realize is that if this is a recommendation, there are some people who think the most brilliant general that ever existed on this side of the water was this...
Was Joseph.
Because he fought a campaign which took just about the entire Department of the Army of the West to crush with a handful of people.
And the only reason that they crushed it was because the Nez Perce, and Looking Glass in particular, could not remember that they had telegraph, could not remember singing wires. Electricity was beyond their comprehension.
And they covered how many thousands of miles in their retreat?
Well, they backtracked back and forth over the Lolo Pass and mountains, which today the highway department can barely keep open, you know. And they traversed them
back and forth.
Not exactly in the dead of winter, but winter was it was cold and winter snows were coming.
Yeah.
The last battle at the Big Hole was in at the edge of winter.
How long did that campaign go on?
The campaign, two and a half years, roughly.
Yeah. It's one of the most, you know.
The other interesting thing was that Lewis and Clark came out in the 30s, right? The 1830s, I think, is when they passed through. They left 900.
Before that.
Huh?
Before that.
Did they? 20s?
No, about 18. Jefferson was president about 1803.
Okay, maybe. I was thinking 1830, but I don't know enough about that period of history. The Nez Perce took care of 900 head of horses that Lewis and Clark left. And in the spring, when they returned, gave them 900 head of horses back. Not necessarily all the same horses, but all well-fed, well-cared for. Had never harmed a white man until the 1870s. And they had many abuses heaped upon them. And finally, you know, 1874 or something, they'd had enough, and some drunk braves went and took some lives of people who had taken lives from them. But, I mean, 60, 70 years, you know, of continual abuse, and they took it.
Yeah, and you and I got raised going to the movies and seeing, you know, we couldn't wait till the cavalry came over the hill with a charge.
Right, all Indians were bad.
They got rid of all those murderous redskins, right? Well, unfortunately, our capacity for indignation is limited, and...
It's cool. All things come even sooner or later.
Do they?
I think so.
I'm still... my jury's still out on that. I'd like to think they do.
I think they do.
Yeah. We're...
It's hard to gain perspective on the evaluation.
Well, you can always rationalize. That's the human genius, isn't it? You know. I didn't need that leg anyhow. I can do very graceful things on one leg that I would never have thought of doing if I had two.
I make more money with a tin cup than I ever could as a bookkeeper.
Right, or a bookie. Anyhow, you got an old head, which, and I guess this day and age is not a compliment, because anything that bespeaks more than heedless youth is considered an insult or put down. But... I started saying this when we were talking about that line of Good Time Charlie. You know, you're not a kid at 33. The toughest thing for actors, find this is true, a 21-year-old actor can play a 60-year-old man a hell of a lot better than he can play somebody that's 33 or 35.
Yeah, it's hard to define 33.
It's hard for a young person who hasn't been through what a 33-year-old has been through to understand what the difference is, because they don't have to look that different, do they? I mean, a man can still look young and have most of his coordination and the rest of it and swing if he wants to.
Right. Well, there's a lot of record execs will tell you that.
Oh, sure, I'll bet. And they weren't, the last time they were 33 was 20 years ago. But, no, it's true. But there's a whole different ball game between 23 and 33, usually.
Sure.
Except
and sometimes, if depending on who you are and what you've gone through, 33 is a better place than 23 was.
It's a hell of a lot better place. Somebody, you know. I've said this before, but when I turned 30, I was so impressed by the fact that I forgot about it until about 5 in the afternoon. And somebody said, wouldn't you really like to go back and be 20 again? I said, if somebody came along and give me a passport,
I might like
back
to go back to
my
14. 20s. Now, 14 was a little better.
For you.
Right. I was having a good time at 14.
You didn't know any better.
Yeah, I was barely down in trainer bras, you know. It's a good time.
Yeah. But anyway, I told this guy, I said, if somebody offered me a passport back into my 20s, I'd punch him in the mouth. You know, and I said, as far as being a teenager, who needs a pain? You
really?
Know?
Too many pimples and not enough money.
Well, that brings it down to simple things. But the thing that amazed me about some of the stuff you write is that you seem to be able to see through the eyes of somebody who's got experience that you couldn't possibly have gotten directly. So where the hell did you find out about it? Just living? Looking? Feeling through the pores? Telepathy? Empathy? What?
What was the question?
That's what I thought. No, I mean, how the hell can you write a song that sounds like it could only have been written by somebody that's, say, 10 or 15 years older than you are?
Well, I mean, that's sort of what you're supposed to do when you write first person through someone else. You know, I mean, you have to have a certain empathy for where that person is at. I mean, it's too easy to say that person is wrong. He's obviously not wrong. He assumed that he was, to quote or paraphrase Saroyan, that he was the right person or a good person in a bad world, and that what he is only what the world did to him. You know, he's still essentially the child.
That's generous.
So depending on who the person is that you're referring to, I wrote a song one time about a guy who was a drover. My grandfather had been a stockman and a stockbroker in the literal sense of broking livestock, if that's the way you explain it, selling cattle and sheep and horses and stuff. And this guy had been a victim of gonorrhea and never had it treated. And he was, I'm sure, had been a very handsome man, because he still was handsome at age 60, 65 or something. And used to walk around the streets of South St. Paul. And I used to think he was a drunk until somebody told me different. And he wasn't a drunk. There was nothing coherent about his life. You know, he just, he rambled, you know, in all senses. And it's not too hard to draw that story. You can see where the man is. And you can see what it must have been like while he was having good times.
You have to be interested enough to see it, don't you?
Well, yeah, I don't know. For me, it was hard not to be interested.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it makes sense. Now, what about Reverend Stone? Where does he come in?
Well, he comes in solitary, coming down off hard drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, be human. Be human, please. And it's hard find a human being when you're in solitary, because you're all alone.
There's one human being in there with you.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully. That's the rub. You have to find him at that moment.
Yeah.
You also have to tune your guitar in a different tuning. You also have to understand that this song has not been sung by anyone, I'm sure, for many years. Several years, let's not say many years. Since you heard it on that record, whenever that record was done.
When was it done?
4 years ago.
Yeah. Overnight success, friends.
Really, folks, I'm going to keep doing it until I get it right.
I'm sitting here alone, this goddamn cell of puking bone. I'm just a hollow shell have a need to make your cold hearts bleed. Jesus, I call your name. I'll scream upon my knees. I'll settle the prayer. Ain't you got the price? Baby, you just laugh and stare. I have a need to make your cold hearts bleed. Jesus, I call your name. Stones begun to fall. You said no bail. You didn't even call, at least to return the pail. I have a need to make your cold heart bleed. Jesus, I call your name. Caretaker, have you dug your soul? Well, once there was a heart. Now an empty hole.
Paternoster, grace, and chill, sanctificated on him to him, I've been here, and to be upon a task to it, and seek and chill it in town. On him, not a hole.
Good on the record, but it wasn't like that. Hey, that's, I mean, you really got me bugged.
Okay.
Really, because that is something you're not doing.
No.
And you're not doing it because you ran into some resistance, I suppose, when you tried to do it for people who weren't really interested. Something, if you'd done it on stage the way you did it just now, I don't see how anybody, even the dullest-witted, half-crocked kid in the audience would be grabbed somehow by the collar of his soul and made to listen. And if that's, I would say that's your best, but that's a lot better than just about anybody's doing right now. And it's that meaningful. It you should be able to go with your best.
Well, see, I think so too, but it ain't necessarily the truth.
I think it is. I think it's the only way you ever anybody ever really makes it, unless they're a minor talent. And then they go with the best they can do, or it doesn't happen. But if you're a major talent, I don't think it ever really happens until you say, hey, damn it, listen to me. On
maybe.
My terms.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm still working that out. There's a lot of things that I don't play for people. that I would like to play for people.
Like what? Right now.
Oh, okay. This is how you write a song.
So hard, a lonely heart strikes back through sheets of glass. The stains turn to shadows, fall like tears upon the framework of a song. Where right or wrong is just a question. Never always answer. Hey, gypsy, where you going? Every time I turn to see, but you can't hear me. I try to reach, but your image fades away. Hey, gypsy. The glutton eats for pleasure, as the thief must eat from needing. Love, what's up above is all around. Babies, please love, just love. And what you do to me, you know I've done to you. There's nothing free. Every time I call your name, I hear you calling me. But there's no way for me to be. Hey, gypsy! The pirate fears the desert as the miner fears the sea. He drowns from dreaming of a woman in the darkness who still calls him. She has nothing he can steal, nothing he can lift, not even darkness. What's the matter of those tears upon your face? Oh, I see. Oh, baby, you've been crying. You say the road is slow and lonely. Oh, but baby, where'd you say you're going? Hey, Hey, Gypsy! Hey, Gypsy! Hey! Hey, Gypsy!
Wait for me.
I asked for it.
All right.
We got it. Boy, don't stop singing. You're singing better than I ever heard you sing. Record, person, anything. Just keep going. Got any more new stuff?
Yeah.
We got a buzzing mic, and I'm not even going to bother trying to change it. You know, if you sing loud, it overloads a little bit, and the hell with it. It's a little distorted. We're not making a studio record.
Really, folks, this is live. It's cold as hell here, too.
Our little cottage in the west.
Actually, we're trying to keep up with the energy crisis, and we're cutting down as Nixon wants us to do.
All the way down.
These are hard times.
Angel on my doorstep says the time has come. Pack up your family, get ready to run. Death, plagues, and famine will howl to a roar, and the hard times that drive you from door to door, and the hard times they'll drive you from door to door. Cain said to Adam, how can it be fair? You double my burden, you lessen my share. Your love is uneven and so is the score. You forced me to wander from door to door. In the hard times, they'll drive you from door to door. The hard times that will drive you from door to children of fortune, strange and so odd, dwelling east of Eden in the land of love. Blow on your trumpets and roll on your drum. The prophets have spoken, the hard times have come. In the hard times, they will drive you from door to door. The hard times, they will drive you from door to door, from door to
strong.
The hard times. Actually, there's a little bit of thievery in that song.
I heard a guy who also thieved it a little bit do a version, a modal version of Skip James' Hard Time Killing Floor Blues.
Hard Time Killing Floor Blues.
Of which there's a little piece of that in there. But it's just the line, the hard times will drive you from door to door.
Yeah.
You know, it belongs to everybody.
Yeah, what are you barking at, dog? We got three dogs, they all bark.
Second of night. Sorry, Fox.
Just get yourself tuned, go where you want. If you tuned in late, I'll tell you, well, while he's tuning, if you tuned in late, this is Danny O'Keefe. And he's got three records, one on...
None of them are gold.
Huh? Just out of curiosity, how many singles did you sell on Charlie?
Well, they told me 400,000, but the accounting sheets don't look like that. I mean, how could you sell 400,000 records and owe $125,000?
To them. Yeah, well, the bookkeeping in the record industry is...
notorious.
Not only is it notorious, but it's also an exercise in higher mathematics that no mere performer can ever understand. They make sure of that.
God, really?
I think they must go to the Institute for Advanced Science at Princeton to get the people to make those things up. And then, of course, there's the returns, right?
The returns are the biggest part of it.
Yeah, right.
That's if anybody's going to investigate that, if you're listening out there, young lawyers, that's the trick right there. It's the stuff they hold back on you. That's what they invest with.
We got a person here who made a record, sold a couple million or three or four. We never did find out how many. And she didn't wind up rich.
No. Well, you know, Burt Bacharach is right. All the stars that ever were, whatever that line is, washing cars in San Jose.
Fresno.
I was going to do another one before that, just to lighten things up a little bit.
All right.
This is one I played in Hawaii. Nobody over there calls it Hawaii, but Jimmy Rogers did, so...
Talk about Hawaii, I didn't know it was so grim. I picked me out a hula hula girl before my boat could land. 'Cause everybody does it in Hawaii, yodelady, yodelady. She got it here, she got it there. She got lips are red and feet are bare. She shy on clothes, but I don't care, 'cause everybody does it in Hawaii, yodelady, yodelady. She got pretty legs, dimpled knees. Oh, I can't remember the song.
Sure you can.
Two pretty legs and dimpled knees. No, sorry folks, you gotta go buy the record. It's on RCA. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll do one of my own that I know.
Voice preachers and other creatures are bound to sing her praise. But you better get bolded, good and loaded, 'cause all hell will be raised. When the Delta Queen comes rolling down the river, hear that whistle, steamboat's round the bend. Calliope is bound to start you humming way down yonder in New Orleans again. Can't you hear that old brass band playing, giving the queen a round of auld lang syne? Stoke her up and get that big wheel turning, smoking down the river one more time. War ramblers, gamblers, lovers, losers, she make you wanna forget your blues. Lovely ladies, ragtime babies, you better get on your dancing shoes. 'Cause the Delta Queen is rolling down the river. Let me hear that banjo ring again.